the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and as we come back, and Steve Haskin joins us, I want to make sure everybody's okay. No broken dishes. California, earthquake this morning, 4.2. San Francisco, and felt down in Southern Cal as well. I was, my buddy Vince the Stevedore, was, he were texting back and forth, and he said, we just had an earthquake. There we go. So, hope everybody, hope nobody lost any pictures off the wall. We're joined by Steve Haskin, and every 5 years or so, we have a Steve Haskin retirement tribute, and I'm going to be Bob Edwards. Steve, this is your life, and we're gonna have your second grade teacher join us, Mrs. Marson.
I don't think Bob Edwards would appreciate it, but it is Ralph Edwards.
Ralph, I'm missing
Bob Edwards this much. Bob Edwards is right next door as we speak.
That's right, Ralph Edwards. First, I had Martini and Rossi instead of Alan and Rossi, and now
E5. And Rossi, that's good. I like that.
I'm turning into Norm Crosby. It's. So I'm guessing if Bob Edwards is next to you, then I'm guessing you're at Fifth Avenue. Very nice, very nice.
Yes, I'm here. I'm sitting here with the glorious Oklahoma training track behind me, and the little doggies running around, and my wife's sitting over here listening to the show. That's why I have you on speakerphone.
Sounds good, actually.
Oh,
sounds
good.
Very good. Yeah,
she
sounds clear
sure
as a bell.
Say anything. She wants to make sure I don't say anything stupid.
Well, I'm not sure. We'll have to take an inventory after when we're done.
Yes, I've known to make a few verbal faux pas in my life.
Well, certainly, Steve, coming on the heels of Monday's alleged final column. It's funny. Tony Black is going to be next, and Tony can appreciate this because Tony, you know, Tony's retired 3 or 4 times.
Well, he'll never retire.
No, I mean, and neither will you.
I like to think the same thing. You know, people always say talk about my retirement or so. I said, yeah, I'm not retiring. This is not a willing retirement. You know, this is a retirement that has been thrust upon me. But I will be back. I keep telling everybody that. I mean, in the first day, I've already gotten several offers and having, you know, people want me to call them back and stuff. So yeah, something will happen. Right now, I think I'm going to just relax for a little while. I'm not used to people staring at me here. I'm talking to you, and everybody's standing here staring at me. I've never had an audience on your show before. No, I mean, it's, you know, I'm just going to relax for a little while, enjoy the family and visit Theo, and, you know, and then I'll probably be bored out of my gourd, and I'll be looking to get back. But, you know, one of these offers I'm sure I'll take. I've had offers, you know, to start a website and blog. I don't know if I'll do that, but there's a few places out there that look kind of appealing to write. So as the general said, I shall return.
Well, exactly. And you know, this is not an era where, you know, ending a period of time in one venue or, you know, in one milieu or, you know, being compensated by one entity marks any kind of, you know, any kind of career end. You know, after a long association with the Blood Horse, and really, we had expected that end was 5 years ago, and so all of this was kind of like a coda.
Well, the thing is, you know, I didn't retire. I left the Blood Horse, you know, and I was looking to do freelance work, and then they got back to me and made me such a lucrative offer, there was no way in the world I could refuse it. So they made me the offer, and listen, I've had 5 great years under the, you know, this contract, which expires today as we speak. So, you know, they just decided, because it's not, people think it's the Blood Horse. It's not. It's the Jockey Club. Jockey Club is going through some major freelance budget cuts. And I guess the amount of money that they were paying me, you know, as Ralph Cramden said, I was the first to go. So that's the way it is. But I'll tell you one thing. It's all been worth it in a way to read all the responses I've got. I mean, I'm so overwhelmed and so humbled by all the responses I've gotten from all over the world. You know, we're talking probably over 3,000 comments between Facebook and the blog and the Blood Horse Facebook, my professional Facebook, emails. Evan's column, that Evan wrote a beautiful column about me, comments on there. And you know what? I answered just about everyone. I've been sitting here up all night answering emails and comments. And the things people say are just so moving and so beautiful. And people are writing poetry and they're quoting lyrics from songs. And, you know, and I'm saying to myself, are they talking about me? I mean, are people actually talking about me that way? I mean, I'm just totally overwhelmed by it. I mean, I've gotten comments from Canada, England, South Africa, Australia, Iceland, Chile, and quote one small town in Argentina. I mean, those are some of the places that have that have gotten people sending all these wonderful comments, and I'm just so totally overwhelmed. I really am. So, to find out how much people think about me and how much they miss me and, you know, and craving for Derby Dozen. You know, people say that, you know, they look forward to it all week, and that's the only reason they read the Blood Horse and all of that. And, you know, I keep telling them, look, don't blame the Blood Horse. Blood Horse, it's not their fault. Like I said, you know, Evan, Evan wrote that beautiful column. I said, it's just the way it is. You know, there's no regrets. You know, no, nobody's to blame. Jockey Club did what they felt they had to do, and that's the way it is. That you know, I had no animosity at all. You know, I feel like, well, you know, I left in good standing, and that's the way to just move on to the next one, just like everything else in life. And things end and another door opens. But you know, like I said, just to see how people feel about me and the comments they make, it just absolutely blown me away. The people writing poems about me, I said, oh my God. You know, it's me. I'm just a schlemiel, and people are doing this. You know, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, it's like an out-of-body experience. It's like saying, well, these people are writing about it. Somebody, but not, can't be me. You know, having an inferiority complex my whole life, it's very hard for me to, you know, soak all this in. But I'm so grateful to everybody. That's why I've answered everybody. Because if somebody's going to take the time to write, you know, I feel like I should answer them, and nice. I try to answer them, as, you know, as best I can, and thank them profusely, and it's just incredible.
Well, this is not dissimilar from the opportunity to, you know, to see what people say about you after you're gone, literally.
Exactly.
It's right.
I told Joan. I said, there's so much outpouring here, I feel guilty returning. You know what I mean? Because then I come back again, and you know, it's like one time Joe Hirsch, by the way, at the end of his, you know, at the end of his career, we were up in the press box in Churchill Downs, and Joe was winning everything you can imagine. You know, the key to Louisville, the honorary governor of Kentucky, every award imaginable, one after another. And after one of them, we were up in the press box at Churchill Downs, and I said, Joe, I said, another award. I said, this is unbelievable. And Joe said, he goes, yes. He says, I feel now the only thing I should do now is die. That's Joe. So I feel like, you know, I don't want to go that far, but I feel a little guilty. If I come back, you know, then what if I ever do retire? You know, people can have... They're going to have to do this for the third time? They already did it five years ago. You know, but yeah, it's just crazy. But, hey, listen, if they want me back, I'll come back.
Well,
now let me ask you a question. I do have one major concern, though.
Yes.
Do you still want to watch up has-beens on your show?
Yeah, I think so.
Don't jump to any conclusions. Sit back and think about it for a few weeks or so. You know?
No, I saw a lot of the comments, and they said how much they look forward to hearing you, you know, with me.
Oh, God, that's amazing, by the way. And you know how many people ask me, are you going to continue doing Steve Bick Show? Are you continue doing Steve Bick Show over and over again? Like, you know, I keep telling them, I think so.
you hadn't heard anything.
I have no more titles. I've never been a former before.
You were former Daily Racing form, right? The former.
Yeah, now I'm a former everything.
There you go. There you go. No, but listen, there's so many things, and you already, frankly, you had already shown the kinds of directions, the work with the Secretariat group,
Leonard Lusky. Yeah,
Leonard Lusky, exactly.
It's great, you know, Leonard, you know, he always wants me to come down to with Bill Knack on, you know, a lot of people come down to, you know, I sell my photographs. Well, I don't sell them. He does. I sign them, and people just come and meet and greet. And, you know, I give little talks and things, and I lead the tours to the breeding farms. So, you know, Leonard seems to think that, you know, I draw people down there. So if that's the case,
I'll
certainly keep on doing it. It's always a lot of fun.
No, that makes that, plus the work. What about the work for old friends, for Michael?
He's looked. The thing is, Michael, you know, for a long time now, has been looking to put out a book of all of my columns, because I've written so many columns about horses that have been at old friends. So he's going to want to he's going to want to put out a book. At least he said it. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but he certainly said that he wants to do it, and. I guess the one thing that's been canceled, you know, because of this pandemic, but originally he had asked me to come Travers Weekend and give a talk at the Washington Inn about telling stories about all the horses that resided at Old Friends, either now and in the past, and because I've got a million stories about them, and so he wanted me to do that. I haven't heard from him, so I may assume that that's been canceled like everything else.
I'd imagine. In fact, we touched on this in the visit I had with Kim Weir for TRF the BCCA, the Belmont Child Care Association. They've got, they're going to have a virtual gala, that kind of thing. Yeah, everybody on the fundraising front in the same position, no doubt. Well,
the only normalcy of Saratoga is being here in this location. And still at 5:30 in the morning, waking up to the sounds of the blum, blum, blum.
Yeah.
You know, you hear the hoof.
Yeah.
You hear the hoof beats in there. And just sitting out here, and you watch the horses train, and it's like everything is normal. And then you go drive, you know, down to by Union Avenue and by East Avenue, and there's like nothing there. It's desolate. And you think of that, the fact that the sales pavilion is going to be, you know, desolate all year and nobody around. You know, it's just crazy around here. But, like I said, just being here, you know, we got this little corner of Saratoga the way it always is, just sitting out here in the back porch and looking at the horses train.
Well, and just the fact that you came up, because we had dinner with Avi and Rhoda a week ago Sunday, and I said, where's Joan and Steve? When are they coming? And then they shrugged. They said, we don't know.
Oh, well, I told them when we were thinking of coming, and then, we finalized it. And then Rhoda contacted Tina, you know, wanted to know if you guys wanted to have dinner, but she wasn't going to be around. And tomorrow night, tonight, you know, Avi can't eat because of the Tisha B'Av. Avi can't eat until 8:30, so that was too late. So, you know, Rhoda was trying to get together with dinner with you guys. But she's, you know, the last night she was away, and she, so that I guess that didn't work out.
There's a funny line, right? There's a like a rejoinder that Tisha B'Av. Right? Well, there's a punchline about Tisha B'Av, and I can't remember what it is.
Well, obviously, all dressed in black today. He's got black shorts on, a black T-shirt, black socks, black shoes. But I don't know if you remember, by the way, but Tisha B'Av is mentioned in a song. Do you remember Alan Sherman, my son, the folk singer?
Sure.
Great album years ago. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, there's a great line there. Talking about this girl. I haven't seen her since Tisha B'Av.
That's right.
He throws in all these Jewish holidays and references.
Hello, mother. Hello, father.
The thing is, the funny thing is that wasn't in that album. That was the single that came afterwards. Album became a hit, and then "Hello, Mother, Hello, Father" came afterwards, which was absolutely brilliant. But I mean, that album was incredible, especially if you're Jewish. But that's still a funny, funny album. How's your Saratoga meet going? I mean, what have you been up to?
It's very strange, and it's just tough to go over, and you know, the racing itself is great, And in some ways, actually, now that I think about it, since you asked this question, tomorrow it's the 1 year for me, 1 year since the eye surgery. And
oh wow, really? 1 year? Unbelievable, boy! Well, I remember what you went through. I remember when we went over your house over there, and Tina kept yelling at you to lay down on the couch.
Well, it's a good thing she did, because it healed. You know, that was a big part of it healing properly. But it's exactly a year tomorrow, and the surgery happened. And it's sort of, in some ways, you know, then laying there for, you know, for 2+ weeks, letting it heal. And then another, you know, it really wasn't until the last 10 days of the meet that I started going back to the track. And even then, I only went a handful of times. It in some ways was an introduction to what you're dealing with here.
Yeah, and it prepared you.
Yeah, it kind of did. And I'm also thrilled that, you know, we went down to Monmouth for Haskell.
Oh, right. You made it sound like you had a really good time down there.
We had a fabulous time, and being able just to go to the track and see some people went a long way. And certainly things are more, you know, there's a little bit more vitality with, you know, some people in the paddock and people in at the picnic tables and that kind of thing. Some of the owners that are coming, there's a little bit, and also the town. Certainly this past week, you could sense that there was more life. We talked about this yesterday with Pete, and I also talked about it with Andy on Tuesday. There's plenty of people that are coming to town, like you guys are, and that are, you know, going to dinner and you know, going to do the things away from the track that they do every summer. And so that is helping. But at the track, it is really... You don't know what to do with yourself. I mean, to be honest, and that's the biggest frustration.
We were on Broadway yesterday, and I mean, you know, there's plenty of people, a lot of people just walking down the streets without masks on. But that's their decision. But you know, you go into the restaurants, and you know, everything seems normal. The social distancing is good, but the fact that they don't have as many customers there. They're obviously jacking up the prices. Like last night, when we ate in 15 Church, Chilean sea bass was $48. $48 for Chilean sea bass. I mean, whoa. I mean, I never heard of such a thing. You know? If I knew that, I wouldn't have picked up the check. I looked at the check and I went, what? You know, I don't think it said $48 on the menu, I'll tell you.
I can't believe somebody that's unemployed is picking up checks.
That's true. Listen, as they say, you only live once, right?
Oh my God.
I know, you know what I love? People are making all references to songs about me. People are talking about Mrs. Robinson. You know, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Jolton Joe has gone away.
Nation turns its lonely eyes.
March. I will follow him wherever he will go. I mean, it's wild. It's something, the creativity people are coming up with. But, I mean, listen, whoever's listening, I'm here. I'll probably take a little break, but I know a lot of people, they want that Derby Dozen next year, and I hope to be back doing it. I really do.
I have every confidence. Well, the one thing that you haven't done, and I don't have any, there's no reasonable explanation for this, and we have to incorporate Lenny somehow. With all of the Zoom, with all of the agglomerating of Zoom broadcasting, how is there not a rebirth of And They're Off?
People are asking. It's amazing.
You should do that.
People are mentioning that, too, and I talked to Lenny the other day, and I said, you know, I don't know where I'm going to wind up or if I'm going to have my own website or anything like that, but, boy, I would I would love to start up something like that. I mean, people don't realize. I don't know if they're archived, if you can find them. I mean, some of the stuff was brilliant.
They're on YouTube.
We did a piece about Pimlico, and I don't think they still – they ever. Mike Gaffigan, I think, stopped talking there. Everybody, the Blood Horse. But we did it, and you know, most of it, you know, it was on Lenny's end. And Stable Boy, you know, Alex, they put together these videos and found these film clips. And there was one of, like, this ramshackle, you know, old shack. And all you see is it standing there. And next thing you know, it just totally collapses. I mean, it was a scathing attack on Pimlico. Because that's when it was in really disrepair and everything. It was all fun. And then we did a tour of Churchill Downs.
Yes.
And we went up to the new suites that used to be the press box upstairs, and they built these $50,000 suites or so. So we went up to we just snuck in to film it. Then as soon as we walked in, the first thing we filmed in there was was the bathroom. We were showing the toilets and the urinals and stuff. I mean, it was really crazy. We had some creative stuff. And like I said, a lot of it was Lenny and Alex on the other end. It was funny, funny stuff. I would love to get back. Because, you know, Lenny, I don't tell you Lenny's sense of humor. You know, we're talking Andrew Dice Clay's sense of humor.
But, that's right.
You know, Lenny's one of the sharpest, funniest guys you'll ever meet. And he is so creative when it comes to the humor. And we did some great stuff. I would love to have a resurgence. We used to go to the Breeders' Cup in Santa Anita, and we'd sit on the bench, you know, back by the paddock there. One after another, people, you know, coming over, which I'm sure they do to you all the time, too, you know, telling me how much they love the show. But people coming over to us and saying, oh, yeah, and they'd recognize us somehow and said, oh, you know, we love And They're Off. And they'd come and they'd want to talk. And it was great. So who knows? You know, maybe one day we can archive it. But I'd like to, start it over again. But I'd like to check the archives and see if somewhere, you know, it's in the bowels of the
There's some on YouTube, because every so often, if I'm looking for a photo or I've looked for something, and you know, I know the one that we did. I can't remember if it's the one at Belmont sitting on the chairs up at the top of the hill.
We did some great ones there. Yeah, from the past, we did some great ones.
Yes, yes,
and we did some there, and we did them on the chairs. Those were great. That was one of the great things of And They're Off. Those Belmont shows that the three of us did—they were fantastic.
A lot of fun, and I think there's no reason, you know, given the technology advancements that and you did have some where you guys were doing that when you couldn't be together, but now it's even easier. So grab a sponsor for that, and that'll be first order of business.
Joan was the New Jersey producer. We'd set up the camera. You know, we had a backdrop. They made up an entire backdrop for me, which they sent to me, and we'd put it in the back, and then they sent me a camera, and on a tripod, and we set it up, and Joan would look through there to make sure I'm centered, and I wasn't fuzzy. Although I was hoping that Well, it would be fuzzy, but
you're usually very fuzzy. There's that part. Nothing's right, going to stop you being fuzzy.
Don't get me too much in focus. I don't want to be too much in focus. I never saw it. And then I would go to FedEx, with the little chip with the memory card, and FedEx the memory card to them, so they would have it, the next day.
Not necessary anymore.
You know how we did end there off in the beginning, by the way? I drove. Every time we did end there off, I drove an hour to Monmouth Park to have the Monmouth Park film crew film.
Really? I didn't know that.
Outside. Yeah, they filmed it. The Blood Horse made a deal with Monmouth Park. So they had their videographers there, and they would set me up in one of the by the benches, where they had a little stand there where they did the shows.
Yes.
And I would go in there, and they would film it. And I didn't see Lenny. I could hear Lenny because I had the earplugs in, so I would hear him, and they would film me. And then I would drop on my way home. I would drop it off at FedEx. I had to drive an hour every day every week to do end there off until they gave me my own camera that I was able to set up at home. Now you can do anything. I mean,
exactly.
With Zoom and everything, the technology now is so amazing.
Exactly. So get at it, and we'll start to look forward to that. And for all the new versions of the reinvention of Steve Haskin, it'll you could come up with it.
I always hope the reinvented one is better than the one before it.
Well,
although I don't know if I can top it.
I love it. Well, Steve, let's spend some time talking. There's now been at least 45 to 50 minutes straight of without a horse being mentioned. Between you and me and Dick.
Just tell me which one of the five horse fields you want to talk about.
Well, we can touch on some results first before we talk about the Whitney. I mean, that's a nice five horse field.
That's not a really good five horse field.
You can't worry about that.
Good horses.
But I want to get first.
A horse like Code of Honor, is going to be at a disadvantage in a race like
that.
Because there's many talented horses that want to be right up there close to the pace. It's going to be very difficult for him. What do you want to talk about, the Haskell?
No. Didn't we do that? We did that last week.
Oh, did we? Okay. I looked.
Yeah. I want to get your read on Maximum Security. That performance, because there was a ridiculous response to the people that just that somehow the animosity toward this horse is beyond belief.
Oh, I hate it. People don't understand, but people, I don't know how people think, really. How could you not admire this horse? First of all, somebody should write a book about this horse's career. I mean, this is Shakespearean. I mean, it's just incredible career. But how could you not marvel at what this horse did? I mean, he didn't get a good ride. He had to check. It's a horse who wants to be on a lead. Midcourt was intent on getting the lead with the blinkers on. The horse is virtually unbeatable when he sets the pace, and you knew he was going to be tough. And when Cedillo had a check on the backstretch and dropped three, four lengths off, I said, oh, my God, I said, forget about it. This horse is not going to win. And, especially when Flavian Pratt came up to him on higher power, and I said, I can't see this horse winning off such a layoff, and we don't know what we're expecting. And, he made that move in the stretch, and he just outgamed a really, really good horse with a big gap to third on a dead racetrack, a deep, tiring racetrack. And I got a call last night. It was very nice of Bob Baffert. He called me last night to see what was going on because he had read about it. And he was raving about it. He loves that horse. I mean, he was telling me that, when he got that horse, he didn't want to eat that much. He was not cleaning up his feed at all. And he really wasn't eating after the Saudi Cup. That race probably knocked him out, the trip and everything. And that was a tough race on him. That also a race looked like he was totally beaten in the stretch. And he managed to pull it out. And he said, the horse just wouldn't eat. And he started picking up, and then he started giving all these good workouts. Because remember how John Service trained, Jason Service trained him. You know, he was giving all these crazy two-minute licks and then these crazy workouts down the backstretch and, you know, six furlongs and 116. I mean, it's crazy works. But, you know, he finally had some typical Bob Baffert works. And he had a tough race, and Baffert said after the race, he cleaned up his feed like in 5 minutes. He licked it clean. So he loves the horse. He thinks the horse is a terrific horse. And hopefully it silenced some of the doubters. You know, no matter what you think of, you know, Jason Service and the whole Navarro incident and anything like that, you know, give this horse some due. Give him his due for what he's done, accomplished throughout his entire career. You know, going back to the Florida Derby, but look what they've taken away from this horse. Look at the NCRA poll. I mean, except for three people, everybody just dropped him completely. You know, now he's back, you know, back to the top. But if you believe in the horse's talent, he's got to be number one. He beat Midnight Beast, who is number one. And now he's come back. It's just a great story. I mean, just what a crazy, crazy career this horse has had. But I love the horse. I really do. I just love the whole story.
Now, I agree, and we'll look forward to the Pacific Classic, you know, distance-wise. I think that's even more to his liking. The one thing that needed to be, you know, driven home was the people that were deriding him in the performance were simultaneously insulting John Sheriffs in midcourt, which I guess they didn't realize that they were, you know, partaking in you know, a wider smear beside, you know, just, you know, and the horse is the horse. I mean, he, as you've said, the horses don't know if they're getting horse of the years and eclipses, and they couldn't care less. As long as there's a couple of, you know, a little bit of sweet feed or a little bit of molasses in there and some carrot chunks, they're happy.
Exactly, and that's why I keep saying about, you know, the Eclipse Awards, and they said, oh, I feel so bad for the horse, you know, he deserves it. And I keep saying, look, if you could ask the horse, what would you rather have, the Eclipse Award or a carrot? Which one do you think he would choose?
Exactly. Exactly,
you know?
Right.
I mean, this is not like, you know, the MVP in baseball or football or anything like that, you know, when it's so important. Here, they're talking about awards for a horse who couldn't care less if you won an award.
Pretty funny. Well, beside that, Steve, the rest of the action, I want to slip in the allowance performance because it's probably going to have an effect. I don't know if it's necessarily a derby. There's not going to be an opportunity for Happy Saver to find his way to the derby, but he maybe could find his way to the Preakness.
Could be. I mean, he's still lightly raced, but boy, he's got talent, I'll tell
right?
you.
Right? Yeah, yeah,
really,
yeah.
Really nice horse. I mean, yeah. You can't... I just, the horses like that have come along. At least you say to yourself, well, you know, most likely he's going to be around next year. That's the good thing. No matter what he does this year.
Right.
Let him progress. He's got a big four-year-old campaign coming up. They're not going to retire him because he hasn't done enough, you know, to get any kind of written normal type stud fee. So just race him as a four-year-old. But, you know, if they want to try and get to the Preakness, yeah, it's still going to be kind of tough. But like I've always said, the difference between these lightly raced horses going into these races now is that they are going to be meeting much more mature and developed and experienced horses than they would if they were meeting them in the Preakness in May, you know, when they're a lot closer together in experience. But here you got horses that have been running all year. So, you know, it's not going to be easy. But, you know, the crazy thing about this year's Derby, good luck handicapping. Look at all the horses now that are training up to the race. I just read this morning that Major Fed now is training up to the race. Sole Volante is training up to the race. We're talking about 11 weeks. Now, there is a difference, again, because if you look at Regret, 1915, right? She won the Derby. Her previous race was the Hopeful. The Derby was the first start. But the Derby wasn't the Derby back then. And since then, it's been 105 years, the most any horse ever... most time any horse have had between races going into the Derby was 6 weeks, and that's only happened twice. One was Animal Kingdom and one was Needles in 1956. This happened twice in 105 years. That's 6 weeks. Now you got trainers that want to go into the Derby for 11 weeks. 11 weeks. It's unheard of. However, the difference is here is that these horses all also have experience behind them. They're fully mature as opposed to horses that would try to do it in May. You know, these are horses that have, if they're going to try and get in a Derby off a long layoff, they don't have a lot of bottom under them. These horses at least do. Major Fed's been around the block, so is Soli Volante. But whether it can work, I don't know anymore. You know, I don't think anybody knows because it's never been done. No, it's never been tried. We never had, you know, a situation like we have this year. So we'll see if it works. But how do you handicap? How do you handicap a horse going into the Derby off an 11-week layoff?
Nope.
Not only that, what about shared belief? Shared belief is going to come in off going into a 1 mile and a 16th race in a 5-horse field in 11 weeks.
That's you not, mean Honor AP?
Not that much difference.
Honor AP.
But what did I say?
Shared belief.
Oh, well, yeah, running in the shared belief, right. Well, coming off the, you know, just that the one race, you know, the shared belief, the mile and the 16th. And, see, I told you I'm saying all stupid things. But you know, Honor AP, you know, one mile and 16th race in 11 weeks. Well, you know, good. I think it's actually, it might even be longer than that. It might even be 12, 13 weeks. I don't know. But it's crazy. It's gonna be so hard to handicap this year's Derby. And for the first time ever, really, like I said, excluding Canyonero, you can have horses going in off a mile and a quarter race. You know, like I said, Canyonero ran at a mile and a quarter, but ran 3 6.5 furlong races after that. So you can't even go by that. And, you know, and it's in Venezuela. But we don't know how a horse is going to, how they're going to do going into the Derby, having already run a mile and a quarter. But we're going to see a lot of good horses trying for it. You know, Tinsel-Law is going to be trying for it. Max Player, and there's going to be a lot of good horses in there. So we'll see if they'll be able to handle it. But a lot of these horses that were supposed to go in the Ellis Park Derby, Soli Volante was supposed to be, so was Major Fed. All of a sudden, they're skipping it. I don't know why. You know, well, they don't want the 4 weeks. So you know. They're skipping a race that would be a great. The Ellis Park Derby looks like a great stepping stone. It's like I say, you don't have to win that race. Horses like Soli Volante and Major Fed, they don't have to win that race. You know, if they're going to run second to Art Collector, or if a horse can run second in the Travers to Tinsel-Law, they'll set them up for a peak performance in the Derby. But you know, a trainer like Patrick Bianco, you know, he's always done things unconventional. And if anybody could do it, it's him. So I'm not saying they can't do it, but you know, a lot of trainers are going into the Ellis Park Derby to get points, but they feel they don't need points. But we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen in the Travers and in the Ellis Park Derby, and even horses, you know, for a last ditch attempt could run in the Pegasus.
That's right.
So you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But you know, listen, I trust these trainers. That they're doing the right thing. They know their horse. And like I said, Patrick, if anybody can train a horse off a long layoff, it's Patrick. I mean, he's a tremendous horseman. He knows his horses. And he gives his horse a lot of really stiff two-minute licks. He had a two-minute lick the other day in 150. You know, you keep doing that, and you build up a lot of bottom. So I'm sure Patrick is, you know, he's doing what he feels is right. And, you know, good luck. We'll see what happens.
Well, more important, not more important, but, you know, parallel to this are the runners that, you know, are going to have experience and will have some conversation certainly coming out of Del Mar's weekend and Honor AP, Cezanne, and 1,000 Words. The other two principals look like they're heading to different assignments. Uncle Chuck here, and then
we don't know how good he is for sure. I mean, Baffert thinks he's, you know, he could be something really, really special. You know, to me, he's still a little green. He's, you know, if he runs into Travers, he's going to have to really get his act together. I thought he ran kind of green in his last start, but he obviously has a lot of talent. But I don't know what he's beating out there. I don't know how good 1,000 Words is right now. Granted, after those two horrible races, to see a second. But somebody had to finish second. It was a 4-horse field.
Right.
Two of the horses had no shot. You know, so I don't know how he's going to do here in the shared belief. You know, you got Anne O'Dor. He's trying to bounce back. You, the funny thing is, by the one horse in the race that nobody knows is Kiss Today Goodbye, that nobody's ever heard of. He's got the highest equibe speed figure of all. He's higher than Honor AP and higher than any of these horses. Higher than Cezanne. He's got a in two races back when he broke his maiden at San Anita. He got a 107 equibase number. And then he came back and ran a horrible race last time when he was eased. But, you know, if he comes back to that race, I mean, he's not going to beat Honor AP. But it's just crazy. It shows you what a crazy year it is that this horse has a higher equibase speed figure than Honor AP. But listen, Honor AP, it's really his race. He should win. Cezanne is so lightly raced, and he really hasn't done a heck of a lot. He hasn't beaten much, and he hasn't really done it in overwhelming fashion. So I don't know if he's I think he's going to make a phenomenal four-year-old. You know, curling out of a Bernardini mare, he's going to run all day. He's just way, way behind. If they want to rush him into the Derby, the same with Uncle Chuck, you know, good luck. Maybe the Derby, it'll be a good prep for the Preakness, maybe.
Well, we'll get a good read, no matter what, we'll get a good read on you know, on where they stand. Anne O'Dor, though, is supposed to be going to Ellis, correct?
To where?
To Ellis Park.
Oh, he's going to scratch out of here too.
That's what we heard. That was the last we heard the other day.
You know what? Let me tell you something. It's probably a good move. Why run against Honor AP when you can run against? Well, listen, running against Art Collector is not that much better.
No.
Art Collector might be a better horse than Honor AP. He's only got more bottom, more experience, and he's improving dramatically. We don't know anything about Honor AP. He's hardly run. We haven't seen him in ages. I mean, you got to go back. Anybody ever seen this horse since the San Anita Derby in early June? Do we know? How much do we know about this horse? We really know it. We know he's talented, but look how long he's been out. So,
yep.
I don't know. If I was Blaine Wright, I would take my stay home and run against him here. I mean, you know what? Maybe he doesn't want to run him at a mile and 16th. Mile and 16th. That's a bad distance and a bad timing. You know, like I said, you want to run him at a mile and 16th, and then you got a long. Still got a long layoff to the Derby, and the horses don't win the Derby coming off a mile and 16th prep. So, you know, we'll see. So, I don't know. Maybe Ellis Park Derby is a good spot for him. Listen, with that horse, all they need him to do is rebound some way because, you know, since his races in the Low South Futurity and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he's been a big disappointment. His last race was a little better, but, you know, he was on the pace the whole way, and he tired. Either he's not the same horse he was, or none of those horses are any good. I mean, Storm the Court. I don't know. Why isn't he in this race? I mean, I don't know. I don't even. All those horses in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, they all look like just totally overrated horses. They're not really not that good.
Well, Storm the Court, and you've seen the figures. I know because we discussed it. He's been okay. He actually has made small incremental improvement at three. It's some of the others that have been kind of, and notably Thousand Words that have been, and Anne O'Dor to some extent, that have just been kind of the same and just haven't improved. And you know, it's funny. I'll tell you what's amazing about this, Steve, is that We at least I have not heard people talking about what it was like years ago when there were those precocious horses, and this is almost I don't want to necessarily tie Stormcat to it specifically, but you certainly, you know, tracking 3-year-olds the way you have, remember that period where there were countless precocious 2-year-olds that never made it forward, and now people are like, oh, look at this. It's like, wait a minute. it's such a foreign concept that there might be some precocious 2-year-olds that didn't go forward.
I mean, I know. You know, people flabbergasted. It's like, well, you know, people say, well, listen, what happened to Capote at three? What happened to Boston Harbor at three? I mean, we've done a whole list of Breeders' Cup juvenile winners that were just precocious two-year-olds and never, ever developed as a three-year-old. You know, and like you said, at least Storm the Court is showing an improvement. And to run a one on the Thoroughgraph after finishing third in the Ohio Derby? So where is he, though? I mean, why is he in this race? I mean, I don't know what the plans are. I haven't heard anything about what the plans are for him, but I would have thought this would have been a great spot for him to take another step forward. I don't know if they're going to ship him out of town. I mean, I don't know why they would. This race is right here with a small field. Have him take one more step forward. But if you run a one on Thoroughgraph in your second prep out and you still got another race to improve, you know, go for it. Unless they're another one who's going to train up to the Derby because they thought he ran too fast in that race. I don't know. You know, everybody looks at these sheet numbers, these speed figure numbers, and, you know, it dictates how they train their horses. But I thought for sure he'd be in this race. You don't have to have a tough race in here.
No.
You know, basically, you have one horse to beat. I mean, I'm not looking at Cezanne as a major Derby horse. Yeah, if you can't beat a horse with two very ordinary races in its entire life, you know, in 1,000 words, he was running triple-digit Equibase numbers as a two-year-old. Now he's running nothing. 80s, low 90s.
Yeah, no, he's actually regressed. Forget staying in place.
Yeah.
Something went sideways.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He won by half a neck and three quarters. I mean, he's never won by even as much as a length. You know, he just looked like a horse that looked like he might be an AP Indy type that's
right.
Not going to win by much. He runs with his head down, and maybe he's going to be that type. But he just, like you said, he ran those two horrible races in the San Felipe. You know, after that, and then at Oaklawn, I said, "Wow, what happened to this horse?" And Baffert had three Derby horses going into the year. You know, he's got three different ones.
Three completely different horses. Steve,
it's amazing.
Let me quickly get in a couple of quick thoughts. Your Whitney thoughts. Here we are, 10 years removed from Blame, and little Al, who is sending out live horses, won the nightcap yesterday with a good first time starter. It looked like I've got to look that figure up actually, and then some quick thoughts actually too from you about the Jerkins, because we've got a really interesting set of horses, including one of those Bafferts, Eight Rings, there's also, you know, other refugees from early Derby Trail conversation, horses like Echo Town and Mischievous Alex, Shoplifted, even No Parole took on the cameo, and I gotta mention Three Technique, who this may be exactly what he wants to do, and the cutback, he's kind of got that Alan Jerkins look. The Tap It to Win too, cutting back.
Yeah, you know, Speed doesn't win this race. You know, it never has, whether it was the King's Bishop or the Alan Jerkins or what. It's the class that wins the race. The horse is dropping back. And Three Technique was a horse that I've been raving about all year, even starting last year. And, you know, I was looking at him as a Derby horse, and obviously he had a setback. And now that he's back here, this looks like a really, really good spot for him. But it'll be interesting because the horse like No Parole, usually those kind of horses don't win this race. You know, we don't know how good he is right now. His last race, obviously, he showed what he's capable of doing. But, yeah, I mean, plus they got a big field and a lot of good horses in there. But, you know, getting back to the Whitney, you know, five horses. But, boy, I mean, it's going to be a big, big jockey's race in here. And the thing is, do we really know how good Improbable is right now? I didn't even know he was running. I think it seemed like Baffert just sprung this on us. I didn't even know he was even pointing to the race. But, you know, if he runs back to his Gold Cup, I mean, that was a terrific race. So, who knows? I mean, this is a horse that's been knocking on the door of stardom for a long time, and he's just never gotten over the hump. But this race in a five-horse field, with his tactical speed, you know, he's going to probably be sitting... Mr. Buff has got to go to the lead. I mean, somebody's got to go to the lead. And Tom's de Tot Oh, God bless him. I mean, what a great story this is. Well, you know, all of a sudden now, at this age, to be this good and as versatile. You know, he can come from seventh. He can come from right on the pace. You know, for a horse his age to get this good, this late in career, it's unbelievable. And look at the horses he's beaten. He's beaten Improbable. He's beaten By My Standards. He's beaten, the best horses around. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen in here. But, yeah, and Code of Honor has always been one of my favorites. But and coming off the Met Mile, I thought he ran a phenomenal race. I figured the Whitney would be perfect for him. But, you know, with his style of running, 5-horse fields are not going to be perfect, especially when the other 4 horses all can win the race. You know, and, you know, listen, By My Stands, it was a bit disappointing last time because he couldn't keep up with Tom's D'Etat coming off of 3 straight wins. But, you know, if he runs his race, it's going to be very interesting. It's an interesting Whitney. I got to say, I'm curious to see how the strategy develops, because a lot of horses are going to want to run the same way, except for Code of Honor. They all want to be right near the pace. So I'm seeing kind of a slow pace here. All jocks can be looking to see what everybody wants to do. Unless, you know, whenever you have Baffert in there, how many times, by the way, when it looks like everybody wants to run close to the pace, and it's the Baffert horse that takes the initiative and goes to the front.
Sure.
And he never looks back. You know, Baffert loves sending those horses to the front. Now, I don't know if he wants to run that way, but he has done well. I mean, he won last year at Del Mar in a shared belief. He was right on the fighting for the lead the whole way and opened up and won. And he was right on the lead last time out in the Gold Cup, going 1.25 miles. So, you know, you look at him, he's coming off a 7-furlong work and won 25-4. So, and before that, he worked 7 furlongs, 124-4. I mean, back-to-back 7-furlong works. Boy, I mean, this horse has got an awful lot of bottom in him. If he goes to the front, that horse, then he's not coming back with that kind of bottom, coming off 1.25 mile race and 2 really, really strong 7-furlong works. I tell you, if that horse goes to the lead, you better go after him early, because he's not coming back.
No, fair point. Fair point. I mean, obviously, Johnny, we'll see, but Johnny's going to have to be aggressive, and we'll see if Code can adjust.
It's going to be tough. If he wins his race, I mean, I think Code of Honor is an extremely talented horse.
Yes.
But if he can come back, if he can somehow win this race, it would be unbelievable. But I thought he ran great in the Met Mile. It looked like he was going to win the race, but, you know, the trip he had, and it was so wide, there was no way in the world he was going to beat Pacoma at 1 mile. But if he wins, he's a serious horse now, but he's going to be even more serious if he wins this race, because this doesn't set up for him at all. But, you know, and then turning to the Jerkins, a horse that I always looked at as one of my long-shot new faces, and I thought he was going to wind up to be a Derby horse. And he really never was. That Sonneman, I've been very, very impressed with that horse. And again, people are going to see that he ran second by 19 3/4 in that stupid match race. But it wasn't 19 3/4. He was eased. So, you know, once you fall a length two behind in a match race, you ease the horse. You're not going to push him.
Sure.
He was up against a speed horse, and he's a stone closer who wants to come from 10, 11 lengths out of it. And he had no shot in there at all. But I thought coming off that race that maybe I'm making a point for the Travers. He's by Curlin. He's got good Irish blood on the bottom. So I'm surprised he's shortening him up. I know he won at 7 furlongs. That's when the horses up front killed each other. You know, and they went 22 and change and 44 and change, and he came flying late. But he looked, you know, he had been 1 mile already. So I thought that they were going to move up with him in this. Except I guess they felt he wasn't quite ready, because he obviously had a setback as well. You know, but do we know how 8 Rings is going to run? His horse is, you know, he's working 58s and 59s. You know, if he runs back to his 2-year-old form, he was probably the most talented of all the 2-year-olds last year, the way he won the American Pharoah. You know, absolutely trounced Storm the Court in that race. And there's another horse who didn't make the transition from 2 to 3. But, you know, and he's had some time off now. He hasn't run since April. and the way Baffert's been working him, you know, I mean, he's had at least a couple of 58 workouts. The last workout was 59 bullet workout, fastest of 56 works at the distance. So don't be surprised to see this horse run lights out here. You know, it's Baffert. He doesn't ship a horse if he doesn't think it's a big shot. And if this horse runs anywhere near his two-year-old form and runs back to his workouts, he's going to be very
good. He's a player. I won't disagree. It's great that, you know, considering how many of these races have been, you know, have come up with moderate-sized fields, it's nice to get, you know, this many involved in here. And of course, you know, no parole is going to try to, you know, try to gut it out on the front end. You know,
and
seems...
don't forget Echo Town, ran a very good second to him.
Yes, he did. And is a horse that likes to chase a target. So there's a lot going on in here with turnbacks and stretches from 6 to 7. And then you've got something of a specialist. You know, the horse that we haven't talked that much really, we're out of time here. I got to get to Tony. But Mischievous Alex, I mean, this has been their goal. This has been Service's goal for months.
Yeah. You know, whether he's fast enough, obviously he wasn't fast enough for No Parole last time. You know, because he likes to run right, you know, right on the lead or fighting for the lead. And again, when those kind of horses, you have to take them off the pace, they don't have that closing punch. So it's just a question of the strategy. You know, what is he going to do? He's not going to outrun No Parole. But if I was Ortiz in here, I would go after him early, because that's the only way this horse really knows how to win. He's not really comfortable behind the horse.
Well, but if you go back to that swale, and that's the race to, that's the replay to watch, because there's something, Arad gets back on him in here, and that counts a little bit for something. You know, Carmouche rode him in the Gotham win, rode him in the Woody Stevens, and it's interesting because Arad, we think of Arad as somebody that comes from off the pace, and he arguably had his best performance in that swale and with Ortiz. And I mean, this is really, I'm just looking for who else, you know, Three Technique is 2 for 2 at 7/8 as well. And Sonneman, a win in a second, Captain Bombastic, a win in a third, you know, 7/8 is so special and so unique. Mischievous Alex, 2 for 3 at the distance. We're going to talk with Tony Black about the difference between, you know, the 7/8 cutback versus the 7/8 from 6 and so forth. Steve, this was a wonderful hour. I appreciate it.
It was. And when you speak to Tony, tell him, thank you. He sent me a nice email. So
nice. Well, I think actually he might be right there listening. Mark, is Tony live on the line?
Live, Steve. I'm on the line. And you know what? When it came to the email that I sent, it was felt from the heart when I heard you weren't going to be writing for Blood Horse anymore. And I know you know it came from the heart. That's their loss. Like I said, it's their loss, and it's a loss to a lot of readers that you're not going to be connected with them, because you have a unique way of looking at horse racing. And it's, as a writer, you don't look at it like a writer. You look at it like a person that's been in the trenches on the backside. And that's what I respect so much about your writing. You're a person, Mr. Haskin, that knows exactly what people are thinking, horse racing people are thinking, and you write with a realistic point of view. You don't write with somebody's writing point of view that just came to the track as a spectator. You write with a point of view like somebody who has lived on the track. So you'll be missed.
Well, we actually lost Steve for a couple of seconds there. He may have actually heard everything, though, because they're listening over at the Friedberg. Steve, Tony was live on the line, actually, as we lost you.
Yeah.
And he just said really nice things. I don't think we're not going to repeat them.
I can't believe you're not sick of me already after an hour. You had to call back.
Well, we are, but we still needed to call back.
Well, Tony, thank you very much. I appreciated the kind words. Thank you for writing.
Well, they were easy to write because they came from the heart.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, with you, it always does.
Well, we have a connection, and it has nothing to do with what I said the other day. But we have a connection. You, me, and my Joliet.
Oh, yeah, we'll always have that connection.
And we'll always have that connection. But as I was saying earlier, you write, your articles are written as a person that's lived racetrack, not just been to it as a spectator. You write as a person that's lived it and understanding the mindset and the mentality of the people and the horses that you're writing about. And I thank you so much. You'll be missed.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope to be back. I mean, there's other venues out there, and... like I told Steve before, I've already gotten some offers and people want to talk to me. So, you know, there's a lot of places to write out there. And hopefully, you know, all the readers, you know, that have been so nice over the years, and they'll follow me. So I'll let everybody know, all the people that emailed, and I'm going to email back every one of them back and just tell them where I'm going to wind up, and on Facebook as well. So, you know, I'm not going anywhere just yet.
He's not going anywhere. Don't worry, Tony.
I hope.
No, I, and you know what? I hope you don't go anywhere except staying involved in racing. And if it's not writing, then you should be doing something live. You know, like there's so many venues and avenues to in this modern day of technology that you can express yourself. Not just through writing, you can express yourself live, as you do on the radio, and who knows, maybe it'll be on Zoom or some other modern technology that I don't even know about, because I'm low-tech.
Yeah, so listen, you don't have to tell me. You're talking about low-tech, by the way. I mean, you know, listen, if I see a five-year-old somewhere, I'll ask him for help. You know, but listen, there's so many venues out there. You know, with Steve winning so many awards right now, he might need to
help. Please. Please.
Steve should win an Eclipse Award.
People will come to their senses at some point. That's on its way. As soon as they find the right category for him, so he's not up against written features and nonsense like that.
Stop.
You know, he's up against 3,000 word features that if they have a little video in the feature, he's up against that. It's absurd. I mean, for what he does, you know, he should have won one a long time ago.
Very nice. Listen, let me pull this up and gain control, because you two, not at all. It's our pleasure.
Tony,
go have some whitefish.
And thank you again.
Thank you for all you've done.
We'll see you this weekend, I'm sure, Steve, at some point.
What's that?
We'll see you this weekend.
Well, we're leaving tomorrow.
You're leaving tomorrow?
Well, we got here on Tuesday. We got here on Tuesday, so we'll leave. Well, listen, we'll be back. We'll be back. You know, it's a good time when you guys are around, so we can all have dinner together.
Well, are you gonna come up when Lenny comes up? No.
Oh, I'll be up definitely when Lenny comes up. Yeah, we'll all definitely get together there.
All right, we'll put you two together again on television too.
Okay, great.
All right. On that Sunday. Very good. Steve Haskin, everybody. And back again. He's retired for the second time on this show.
That's right. Yeah, listen, okay, as long as the people want me, I'll keep retiring.
Unbelievable. somebody get the hook, will you?
that keep retiring sounds too much like Tony Black.
Well, I brought you up. I invoked you earlier that you're the only guy that's retired more than Steve Haskin.
I didn't get that part of the show. See that? Well, one thing about it. You're speaking the truth. You didn't even have to make that up.
No. And then you're still not retired. Steve, we've got, Steve, we'll talk to you soon. No later than next week. Steve Haskin, everybody, and Tony with us. And we've got at least 10 minutes with Tony because I want to get Rich Eng in as well for a couple of opinions today and get his impressions of Del Mar last week as well. Tony, two things. I sent you minutes after it happened, the video of your man, Frankie Pennington, doing something that a bug boy wouldn't do. What, did you talk to him since then? Since last week? Monday?
You know what? I haven't gone over there because I've been tied up at the house for that. But the more I looked at it, the more I'm thinking, Frankie, what the hell were you thinking and doing? He definitely had a brain shutdown, because this horse gave you plenty of indication what he was thinking about doing, and you not only didn't pay attention to that, you went and helped him do the wrong thing. I'm so glad the horse can jump a little bit. Maybe J.R.S. Fisher or Grand Motion or one of them guys will like him and bring him over there and let him go over the jumps, because he jumped pretty good, even though he did it. It was lucky the fence gives away those portable fences like they do. But he reached and hit him right-handed at a time that a bug boy would have done something like that, and you'd have said, see, you learned your lesson. Frankie don't need to learn no lesson. He's a good rider, but he certainly had a lapse in judgment on that particular incident. That horse gave him every indication early on that he was going to do something wrong, and then he reached down and hit him twice right-handed. The more I looked at it, I wanted to slap Frankie for being stupid. I am going to break his chops about it, because he didn't get hurt. If they got hurt,
he wouldn't.
But he didn't. He's fortunate.
Well, for those that didn't see it, this came on Monday at Parks in the seventh race. And the first issue with this, and, you know, Tony, not that I need to provoke you into going to management with a complaint.
Right.
For those of you that see turf courses that have those gaps.
Right.
From either a chute or from configuration that offers, you know, a second avenue of entry into a turf course,
you typically put
a rail. Yes, the extension, because horses run for open space. And so when he saw that gap, he went for the gap, that horse.
Right.
Goodbye, you know, Bert Tycoon, Philly.
I think at one point they used to have a long extension. And I think that, you know, that's the first thing after I criticize Frankie's judgment, which I'm still criticizing it, because even if he, you know, it didn't have to happen. But you are absolutely right. And I was going to go back and talk to a few riders, but I haven't gotten over there, and talk to Frankie and see why have they not had that extension, or did they not have it any extension, you know, when you go look at it. That came to mind, exactly what you're saying. And horses do go for open gap. That could have been avoided, but you know what? When you have a situation like that, another horse could do the same thing, and it can be a problem that's eliminated with an extension.
Yeah.
But I don't know. If I remember correctly, you know, we used to have an extended rail there where horses wouldn't, you know, they would have a rail to follow. And the one thing horses do when they follow that rail, when, you know, I always used to like to be on a horse that would follow that extension, and then they would hit the open space, and if they had some energy left, they'd accelerate. They wouldn't look to go in that gap because the extension was still on their mind and lead them past it. And they would accelerate when they seen daylight, you know, because there's nothing in front of them that's intimidating them. And
right.
You used to get a surge out of them when you cleared the extension. You'd get a surge if they had any energy left at all. It was funny. And it gave you a shot to run up through on the inside or to get some momentum and catch the leader if that's what you were looking to do. I think that somebody might have dropped the ball in that particular case, and I'm going to go over there and investigate it because, you know what, I always try to get on management and give them some heads up on safety issues, even though they don't always appreciate it, and they don't always think that... That it has to be done. It's not a safety issue. It's just one more thing you guys are complaining about. But I think there used to be an extension that they had there.
Interesting.
And they maybe they got lazy and didn't want to send men out there to put.
Interesting. Report back on that, Tony. I'm curious.
I will.
You know, okay.
Sometimes, and this is maybe a cruel thing to say. Sometimes they think of Parks racing as third rate. You know, I don't. It's good racing. I think that the racing's not third rate, but sometimes the upper management is third rate. And I don't care if they're listening now or not, because I really feel that way. A lot of times I've given them, I've learned one thing with them. Put it in an email where they have to say they received it. You know, I had an issue where I told them to fix the outside fence not too long ago. And they said, well, what do you want us to do, shut the track down for Tony Black because the outside fence is needing repairs? I said, well, repair it. About a month after I sent them the email, one of Guadalupe Preciado's horses brushed against it and got 170 stitches in his shoulder. You know, then I said, why didn't you fix the outside fence and repair it before this happened? Here it is in an email. You know, one day a horse runs into services horses because they had just a blinking light for the loose horse system. I sent him an email. I said, the blinking light must be for the hearing impaired, but you need an audible siren. Well, one of the loose horse one day came, riders were unaware, ran into one of the services horse. The girl broke her arm, killed one of the horses, and then they put a siren up. But they don't always heed my warnings, but you know what? I'm not going to stop warning them because I respect what riders do for a living, and if you can eliminate a hazard, eliminate it. Well, there I'm on my soapbox.
There you go. Tony, I want to get, we've only got about 4 or 5 minutes, but
okay.
I do want you to address 7/8. And I've brought this up with you in the past, and it might have been related to a race like the former King's Bishop, the Alan Jerkins. And it explained to people the uniqueness of 7/8 and, you know, the cutting back, what cutting back from a mile and a 16th, sometimes a mile and an eighth, and the difference also of stretching from 6 furlongs, from 3/4 to 7/8, because it's the most demanding distance in a lot of ways, and it's one of the, become my favorite, not just become, it's been my favorite distance for years. And
mine too.
Yeah, it's great.
Here's the two scenarios you just mentioned. When you have 7/8 races and you've been running short, I won more 7/8 races on the lead, and everybody has this mentality. Oh well, you know, I'm on a horse that's been going 3/4. I'm going to sit and make that run. Well, while you're sitting and making that run, I'm pumping this son of a gun to the lead, leaving the gate, and you'll have to catch me through the lane. And most of the time, more times than not, they didn't catch me. You know, speed wins 7/8. Now, when you're coming off of going long races and you're cutting back 7/8, that's a great scenario too, because horses are dead fit. You can ride them all the way, and wherever their early position is, they're still going to either finish, or you can put them as close as you can possibly get them to the lead or on the lead, and they got plenty of stamina left through the lane. So if you got speed, use it going short, going 7/8 while everybody else is sitting. Good. You're sitting, I'm gone. You got to catch me. When I got a distance horse coming back 7/8, I'm gone. If I happen to be on the lead or near it, great. But I'll be running all the way, and I'll have plenty of stamina. Guess what? You got to catch me from the quarter pole wire, because somewhere's in that vicinity coming to the head of the lane, I'll probably be on the lead. If I'm not on the lead, I'll be running them down. Because coming back off of long races, you're dead fit, and you can run all the way.
Exactly. Exactly. And the difference is that the horses that have been successful at three quarters, you know, authentic sprinters, they haven't had the company into that seventh furlong when they've won at three quarters. And it's way more demanding. And also, there's nothing more dangerous than lone speed at 7/8 because forget it. That is when you see a horse that you think might be on a loose lead at 7/8, go into the kids' room and take money out of the piggy bank.
That's it. You know what else, Steve? A lot of riders, the mentality is going 7/8. You know, if there's multiple speed horses in the race, let's say there's three or four to that speed, a lot of the mentality is, it's going to be a speed duel. I'm going to lay off. Yeah, guess what? I'm going. Then we'll figure it out after the first eighth of a mile if we're going too fast. But I'm going leaving there. And you guys that see these other three speed horses, well, we're going to sit. Guess what? You sit. I'm going.
That's make them go where you've already been, and that's how you win 5,200 races.
Yeah, 5,211 with one more to go.
It's so crazy. For me, it's one of the sets of conditions in handicapping that seems to have consistent results and hasn't changed either. It's one of those areas where and we've had this discussion with Shug, you know, who has a tendency to debut horses that, you know, that he knows are actual route goers. He does it, you know, he'll debut horses at 7/8 that he figures are going to be routers, you know, later on in their career, because for all the reasons we're talking about, that, you know, if they've got some bottom to them and some condition, that extra furlong makes a big difference, and they might not be able to be sharp enough to win at three quarters, but that seventh furlong, those extra 220 yards, it makes a difference.
Just like Mr. Haskin was saying, just about how trainers train horses, and Steve was saying, you know what, this trainer's put a lot of two-minute licks and long, fast gallops, long gallops into him, build stamina. Well, guess that's what gets me with Haskin. He hits it right on the head when he makes statements like that. Yeah, it builds stamina, and you'll get a horse that will compete well that's had time off, that hasn't run in a while, because he's got those stamina training works in him, you know, that long gallops, let him 2 minute lick. Just like he was saying earlier, I caught that part of some of his statements today. And he's right on. He's hitting the nail right on the head. You know, the horse doesn't have to run every 2-3 weeks. If you put those long stamina, not works as much as open gallops, you know, builds up respiratory function. It builds muscle and respiratory, and that's what horses need. They need good respiratory system, and, of course, they need muscular fitness. But if they have a good carburetor, like that old 49 Ford I used to have, you know, had a good carburetor on a flathead 6, you can get the most out of that flathead 6 cylinder engine. Well, if a horse has a good carburetor, that's his lung capacity. And you know how you build up lung capacity? It's not with 3/8 mile works, 5/8 mile works. It's let them roll along miles. There's old trainers I work for, you know, we'll go out there and gallop this horse a mile, and then the second mile, let him 2 minute lick the second mile. Guess what? When you rode those horses, they were dead fit, and they maybe didn't run or work in a month, but they were dead fit because they 2 minute licked a mile after they galloped a mile.
Exactly.
Hit it on the head.
That's it, Tony. I appreciate it, and wanted to make sure to swing around to you for both reasons, for the Frankie Pennington incident on Monday, and to get some 7/8 insights.
I might slap that kid when I see him. First thing I might do is slap him. What the hell is he thinking, Frankie? I love him.
Funny.
Yeah, he's a good kid. Everybody.
Tony.
thumbs in it. Take care, Steve. I know you got to go. I'm sorry I took up too much
no,
time.
No, you were great. You were great. We ran long with Dick, and we ran long a little with Haskin, but it worked out great to have the two of you to be able to, you know, to talk together, too. That was fun.
You take care, Steve. Keep up the good work. Eclipse
Talk
Awards
next
in
week.
The future. The Eclipse Awards. In
stop. Here. Stop. Bye. Oh, my God. Tony Black, everybody. And we'll come back. We've got about 5 minutes, a little under 5 minutes. We're looking for Rich Eng here to close out the morning. And I'm going to close out the pick five and pick four play this afternoon. And what's fun about it, and we'll see if Rich has got a couple opinions before we wrap up the morning. There he is, Rich Eng joining us now. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rich, I wanted to catch you and get a couple of opinions, and you've been you know, pointing people in the right direction. You got the action back going at Del Mar last weekend. How'd you make out now with Del Mar back on the menu?
It went very well. You know, took the weekend off before, and really had strong Saratoga card on Thursday and a strong Del Mar weekend. So I'm raring to go, Steve.
Nice. And anything out of the Del Mar results that, you know, particularly, you know, United obviously winning that Eddie Reed on Sunday, and now, you know, some consideration for him to try the main track. Mandela floated the maximum security win, the thriller with midcourt and mm-hmm. hard fought. Some thoughts?
Well, I think one of the big stories out of the meet is Umberto Rispoli.
Yep.
I think if you're betting him blindly, you're actually doing pretty well, because he doesn't get overbet like Flavian Pratt. So I would suggest taking a look at those Umberto Rispoli mounts.
I like it. And Rispoli winning races by the hatful. And, you know, for all the criticism he took, when it came to maximum security, Abel Cedillo swept the two graded stakes on Saturday. You know, he also won with Laura's Light, the big day for Gary Barber, who also, of course, combined with Mark Cassie to win the Celine at Woodbine. Let's turn our attention to Saratoga. What have you been doing here? And, what do you like today?
Well, let's go right into the couple of picks before I run out of time. I'll give a one in the opener, a race one, mile and 16th, inner turf. I'm going to go with the number four horse, Sugar Fix, a couple of trainers that you probably remember from the old Suffolk Downs days, Carl Grusmark and Ned Allard. They've done a nice job with this.
You bet.
With this filly off the claim, and this is like a stakes race for them, Steve. $62,000 purse, so I think they're shooting for the marbles here. So let's go with number four, Sugar Fix, in the first race, and then let's switch all the way to race number eight, another grass race, mile and a 16th. I like the rail horse, Pekka Tanika, 8-1 in the morning line with Joel Rosario. I get the feeling we're not going to get 8-1 because if Rosario's up, but this horse is 2-for-2, wins on the Saratoga grass, should get a beautiful trip. Saving ground on the pocket trip on the rail for Rosario, and he will rally late. So let's go with the one, Pecatonia, 8-1 in race 8, 88.
And it's funny, I've got my own analysis that I'll put up shortly at the website, and I happen to be deciding how to use, you know, who to use in the eighth. What's interesting about the pick four and pick five today, particularly the pick five, there is a potential to lean heavily in the seventh on Mr. Bobby, and, you know, Jimmy Bond going well right now. There's certainly a couple of horses like My Man Flintstone from McPeak, even Starship Bubba, the Noda brothers with two wins yesterday. Starship Bubba has a little bit of a price look, and you get Rosario. But you could, on especially on budget tickets, you could lean heavily, I think, on Mr. Bobby. I think people will. I might. Then you go to the feature, to the John Morrissey for the State Breds, and here's Amundsen for Horatio DePaz. And Amundsen, I think some people are going to tiptoe here. If you need a B horse, I think it's Bank It, even though Funny Guy is the second choice at 5-2. I think Amundsen, if you got a real small budget, Bank It, if you're you know, looking for a B, and if you can afford a little deeper, you could include Funny Guy. And I bring this up because the eighth, I think, is very difficult, and I may use six in there, and then the nightcap is ridiculous. The 10th, this Maiden State Bred 40, there's a bunch of horses in here that can win this, and especially with the scratch really threw things into a little bit of a problem. Every minute of Carlos Martin's came out. Did you have an opinion in here in the 10th?
I'm going to throw one last suggestion as a bomb play in race number 9. The horse you didn't mention, but it's number 8, My Boy Tate, 12-1.
Yeah, Michelle Nevin.
Cross through that last line, the other races are pretty good. And they get Mandy Crankham.
You know, you have to do that to me because I did... My first pass, I kind of looked a little bit. All right, Rich, I appreciate it. Rich Eng for Pro Pick, everybody, on Twitter, racedaylasvegas.com for his analysis. Bop on his noggin, and Rich, by Rich's opinions, and we'll talk next week before the Travers. Steve Haskin, Tony Black. We also, of course, had Dick Powell, and we thank Bob Elliston for the tribute to Catherine McKee. Talk to you in the morning, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.